I have one more copy of Let's Play Doctor. It's hour number one of the Doctor Future show.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. Ladies and gentlemen, KSCO presents the Doctor Future Show. If you would like to join in our show today, you can call us at 831-479-1080. That's 831-479-1080. And now, your host, Doctor Future.
Why do we never get an answer?
Yes, let's play Doctor. Doctor Future for the next 2 hours. With Mrs. Future at the controls.
You certainly sound diabolical today.
Well, I'll wait till the next break. Welcome to the Doctor Future Show, everyone. Happy Tuesday. It's a warm day today in Santa Cruz. 73 degrees Fahrenheit out there. Yeah. Wonderful. We hope your weekend was half as much fun as ours. We had an amazing wedding on Saturday, and on Sunday we had an iOS dev camp. A truly geeky thing to do, but we enjoyed it.
Yes, it was really quite stimulating. Really put me in a good mood. I felt like the future is intact. Young people are full of inventions and hope, and they're doing really interesting things, and they're learning to be code heads in a fun way.
Yeah.
And boy, some of the stuff they were inventing just blows me away.
Yeah. This was on Sunday over at eBay headquarters in San Jose. And it was a gathering of, what do you say?
500 is 500. The official number, yeah.
500 people who were all wanted to create their iPad apps. And a lot of people had ideas for iPad apps, and a lot of people had programming skills. And there was a nice confluence of people to start creating them.
Yeah, but this is in the spirit of a meetup. You know, this still has the energy of people who are just learning for the fun of it, who are at a social event. It was really kind of a funny social event. You know, you have like hundreds of nerds with their laptops in front of them on little tables, and they're socializing together, staring into their screens.
But wouldn't you say there were a lot more women doing this?
There were quite a number of great women. Yeah, I connected with some of the women that were there. Longtime programming women. One of the award winners was a 9-year-old programmer. It was her second year.
Yeah, what was she doing?
She was making an app that was the Toggle game. She was creating...
The Topple game?
Was that? Yeah, she was creating a game that was a balancing game like Boggle, but it was a game on an iPhone or an iPad that was called Toggle. So she actually programmed it so that these blocks could be stacked on top of each other. And then if you tilted it, it would test how balanced they were and toggle. So it was really an amazing accomplishment for a 9-year-old girl to create a game like that.
See, what was cool about this environment, there were people that would help her.
Right. Yeah, lots of people that were helped.
So it became a real exercise in collaborative intelligence.
Yeah. And since we're talking about women who won the award, there was a special prize category for best women app, best women's invention for an app. And it was won by this team of girls who, again, was not their first time there. They created a really, I thought, brilliant app, which they were calling Buy Together. And it was kind of like a Kickstarter app for purchasing a gift for a friend. It was so cute. Like, basically, the person could send out an invite to buy a gift for somebody to their friends, and anybody who chipped in would get their name on the card.
Yeah, it says that their app provides a platform that allows you to connect with your Facebook friends to buy gifts, deals, and share expenses together.
Yeah. Yeah. And apparently they've been working on this for some time, at least conceptually, but boy, they put together a pretty slick little cute thing right there over the weekend.
Yeah, it was pretty neat how they were helping each other buy stuff for their friends. Like, you'd be able to decide, okay, let's get together and buy a cake for Jeannie tomorrow for her birthday.
Yeah, right.
And the girls would just be able to go online and immediately donate, you know, a dollar each to buy a cake for their friend.
Yeah, right. And then the person who started the campaign would collect as much money as possible. If they made it, then it was very Kickstarter-like. If they collected enough money, then automatically everybody's name would go on the card. If they didn't collect enough money, then the person who hosted it would have to basically fill in the blanks or the gift wouldn't get given. Yeah. So it was an all or nothing kind of thing.
Yeah, right. It was only Kickstarter on steroids. It's like Kickstarter for tomorrow.
Right.
Or Kickstarter for later this afternoon when we have to get a gift for our friend.
Yeah, I thought it was so cool that it's something that people do every day. I mean, there's always
microtransactions too. The idea of microtransactions was the girls were bringing it into account, which was really their transactions. When you're a teenage girl, you don't have a lot of money, so microtransactions are where it's at.
Yeah, and also chipping in together to get a gift for somebody is so personal. That
right.
kind of thing is
personal
not happening at the crowdsourcing level, but it is happening at the friend sourcing level.
Yeah.
So I was just blown away at how appropriate that was. And we had the conversation at the time. It takes women to think of things like that, right? That a good app would be something that just serves a small group of people.
On the guy side, there was a young boy, I think he was 10 years old, who was a bit of a geek, and he obviously was picked on in school. So he decided his app was going to be the bully app.
Yeah, Bully Watch.
Called Bully Watch.
So yeah, that was another kid, 10-year-old, and was there with his dad.
Father-son team on bullies.
Right.
Dealing with the issue.
Yeah, and what a great way to process having been bullied, to come up with an app to prevent other kids from being bullied. And what was so interesting about this app that he came up with is that first the app would activate a little warning on a bracelet, right? So this warning would change colors.
Like, yeah, your bracelet would go
if you're feeling threatened, your bracelet lights will go off.
Right, you'll start to turn colors as situation escalates.
Right, right. And if it gets to a certain alert level, then it'll automatically send an email out to whoever is your Bully Watch ally.
Who's going to come to your defense when you're being bullied?
Yeah.
That list of people.
That list of people, and also it's going to say where you are when this message is sent. So for somebody who's really feeling afraid, like maybe he rides his bike home every day, he's got some kid stalking him or something, so he can let people know where he is.
Yeah, so that was a bully app that actually won an award at the end there. One of the great things is that many of the companies in the Valley contribute hundreds of dollars to creating a collection of prizes where all the top developers get something.
Yeah, the prizes were really over the top. It was really cool.
Like $500 gift certificates.
Yeah, the thing was held at eBay, and it was sponsored by people like Capital One and PayPal and Twitter. The founder of it was one of the guys who founded Twitter, our friend Dominic.
Yeah. So check our website. We have a link to the iOS DevCamp winners. And we'll be posting a video later of the winners if you want to watch the whole process.
Yeah,
it's pretty fascinating.
You want to see what
creativity in action in our own neighborhood.
What inventive minds are putting together for the future. It was a very good dip into seeing how that all worked.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. The other night, early in the morning, I was at a party, or at least I thought I was, when suddenly things started to, well, how can you say, shake. And at 3:20, I woke up. I wasn't a party at all.
You were in dreamland. You were dreaming you were at a party.
Yes, you know, and I was in bed with you, my darling.
Yeah, well, next best thing, I guess, huh?
Yes. Next best thing.
Yeah.
So, yes, that was something. We felt it really nicely in Boulder Creek. And I'm sure all of you probably felt something down here, maybe, you know, be interesting. I know I have a friend in a car driving up Bear Creek Road at that time, and he didn't feel anything in the car. They felt it in San Jose. Very fascinating. The story that I have for you on this topic this week is a little bit of focus on the early detection, the whole process of tuning into an earthquake before it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And how likely is that? Can we create a real detector that gives us some time there? So we can go outside or get in our special safety zone or whatever. And the best piece of research on early detection that I've seen from this event was technology from the University of California, Berkeley Seismological Labs. And they have a detection system that gave us about 10 seconds of early notice.
That's really not enough time. I mean, I think the earthquake was longer than 10 seconds, right?
Oh, it was at least 20. From my experience.
Better than nothing, okay?
Yeah.
I appreciate it, but we still have a long way to go.
10 seconds is a start, right? I mean, it's a good start.
Well, maybe that prediction is not the best preparation for earthquakes, right?
Maybe there are other approaches too, but I do think prediction is worthy of some of our attention.
Yeah, well, I think you just have to live with the idea that it's always a possibility and be safe. You know, don't store your crystal on the highest shelf.
True. Right? True. That's that's a longer term prevention, just the way you do things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Rosie, were you awakened by the quake in Ben Lomond?
Yeah. No, it takes a lot more than that to wake me from an earthquake. And no, I didn't. I slept through it, but I had friends in Felton and Zianti that felt it and felt it really strongly. Yeah. And friends here in Santa Cruz that felt it. But no, not in Ben Lomond. No deep sleep at that time of night, one hopes.
Of course, you're all granite there, right? That's Ben Lomond granite rock.
Yeah,
it's a good place to go.
But it was funny because I met with Michael Olson on Friday. We were talking about Loma Prieta and the fact that it was 25 years is coming up.
Yeah.
And I said, look at that. I said, and we haven't had an earthquake for a long time. Then the week before I said that it hadn't rained and I washed my car and it rained here. So you can blame it all on me, folks. I'm good with that.
Rosie, I think you should keep washing your car.
And don't forget that Friday morning you can catch the futures with us on Good Morning Monterey Bay, because we're going to be talking about robots, because we've just seemed to have sunk our teeth into that subject on the morning show. And I just think the future is so darned exciting about it, really. And
robots are on fire right now.
Yeah, totally. There's that new one that I saw on Yahoo this morning that undulates and chats and interacts, and it's like, my mum told me these days were coming. I'm waiting. So Friday, 8:30 with the futures here on Good Morning Monterey Bay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks. Yeah, it was a safe journey.
See you then.
Yeah. Can you imagine when the robots combine with her? Her, the movie, I mean.
Yes, I know what you meant. Not Rosie.
Well, Rosie will have an AI after her at some point. Everyone will.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, the first layer of robots is we're going to invent helpers, right?
To think that we can resist the perfect servant is ludicrous.
Yes, yes. Well, I think servant is something everybody appreciates, but I think that in egalitarian societies such as ours, the whole stigmatism of being a servant really needs to be shifting, because what we want is generosity and helpfulness. It's sort of like when you think of it as a servant, you're sort of putting this hierarchy on it that doesn't really appreciate that.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a desirable thing.
The human hierarchies maybe don't have any meaning anymore.
Yeah, they're really shifting.
Because the computer networks, after all, are the perfect communists.
Yeah, well, there are a lot of people who would prefer to live in a world where they are generous and where their kindness and the kindness of others is the norm. We sort of act like somehow domination is the norm and servants are the norm, and that's not the norm. That's not really the ideal power relationship, because there's so much more energy when people are giving to each other and helping.
Yeah, that's a theme these days, the collaborative energies, the distributed intelligence, that sort of thing. Yeah, we have a guest in the second hour. We'll be talking a little bit more about that.
Right.
He's taken the whole idea of coaching to a new level.
Yes. Yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. Arjuna, our dog.
So back to the earthquake, 10 seconds warning. I'm thinking maybe we should combine whatever they're doing with a seismic prediction from the laboratories, but also from people's own experiments. I mean, some people are experiencing them. I think the phones all have motion detectors in them now that I'm thinking about it. And we should be able to pick up, the pattern of shake in real time across the phone network, the phone data network, for people who want to participate in that.
Okay.
That would give us a real-time reading of the wave, and we could plot the wave in 3D and see it go through a graphical look at the earthquake and through the Earth's crust.
Huh.
We could take that data and apply it in real time and then see what's going on. So I think that's possible, and that's an example of this distributed intelligence where everybody's cell phone contributes to the network of data that would allow us to do that.
I think it's a little like predicting the weather, because I'm just imagining, okay, even if we had perfect data of all of the fault lines on the planet, it's a little bit like when there's a ridge of sand on the shore at the beach and you're kind of wondering, like, when is it going to fall down? There's an awful lot of places to look, and it's hard to know where the fault lines are the most likely to fail.
Yeah, no, prediction's hard. Make no mistake about it.
Yeah. But it's like the weather. There's so many factors contributing to it that
a lot of randomness. But we can see it almost immediately. We're getting better at recreating it almost immediately after it happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm thinking, is that the 3D graphics animations of the wave through the Earth could be seen almost immediately.
Yeah.
And faster and faster, and especially with a distributed network that maybe not only collects the data but helps process it to render it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, just a thought. Cool. I think we'll see more of that kind of technology as we have more of it in our own hands. It's going to demand itself to be utilized for bigger projects that affect all of us, you know, like earthquake prediction.
Cool. You want to talk about robots a little bit more?
There was this thing that I just saw this morning on the RoboBrain.
Right. Yeah, the RoboBrain. That was, I thought, very interesting. I guess there was a conference at Berkeley in July looking at robotics and what kinds of future we all can expect. So, of course, we're very interested in that around
here.
Well,
this seems like a group are organizing the internet so that it's better understood by robot brains as opposed to human brains.
Right, that's it. So
an internet for robots.
We've heard of the Internet of Things. Dear. This is the Internet of RoboBrains.
Let's see. They're currently processing about 1 billion images, 120,000 YouTube videos, 100 million how-to documents. 100 million how-to documents. That's the Internet of Things right there.
Now, if you compare that to a human brain, you know, I mean, a human brain probably has access to way more than 1 billion images if we could perfectly recreate our memory on a screen. Like when people are imagining and they're looking inside their own thoughts or they're dreaming, those are images. Those are the kinds of things that memory is made of.
What do you think the robots want with our appliance manuals?
Well, okay, what this article says is that the RoboBrain is intended to teach robots how to teach themselves the things that they need to know. So the examples that they're talking about here is that in order for robots to learn from this information that's being stored online, they'll be able to, say, access a video of a coffee mug, and they'll learn not only that it is a coffee mug, so they can recognize it, but they'll learn that liquids can be poured into it or poured out of it, and then they can learn to grab it by the handle. Of course, we do that because it's hot.
Yeah, you know, I think...
But they'll learn not to turn it over.
Right. They're like kids in many ways.
Yeah.
Right? The robots are just learning how to navigate in 3D space, especially with the number of different ways that we navigate every moment. Our biological bodies are constantly doing things.
Right.
Putting on glasses, drinking water, walking.
Yeah, okay.
And for you to shift from mode to mode like that, that's hard for robots.
Sure.
They can learn each one pretty well individually, but the fluidity between the moves is tough. So they're learning a lot from us about that.
Yeah. Well, and it assumes a lot, this idea that robots can learn from videos.
We're going to have to learn better in person just like us. But
figure out how to teach them to do that. This kind of stuff is definitely the future. We're trying to figure out how to harness all of these technologies that we love so that humans are better off. And ideally, we're going to turn these robots into things that we like having around.
Well, I asked you, Mrs. Future. Yeah, I like having robots around so far. So far, so good. There can be occasional bad apple. But listen, doesn't this mean that we have to design our websites for robot brains as well as human?
It does. All right, we'll be back after a few words from Ben Fuchs, folks. Dr. Future Show.
35 years, and what I've got to tell you may shock and surprise you, but if you listen up, it may change.
Okay. Somehow Ben got stuck here, so I can't give you the rest of his talk. Dr. Future, why don't you come and carry on with a little bit more information for us while I figure out how to get Ben back.
So RoboBrain and the RoboBrain Internet and our interaction with it, you know, that's going to be interesting to keep a track on. You know, guess who's financing this?
Who?
The National Science Foundation, the Office of Naval Research, the Army Research Office, Google, Microsoft, Qualcomm, the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, and the National Robotics Initiative. Whose goal is it to advance robotics to help make the United States competitive in the world economy? Of course, we want the U.S. to be competitive. You're going to see some new information on portable devices you can put on your wrist more over the next month or so.
Mm-hmm.
Just this week, for example, LG will reveal a little portable computer, a circular one, that looks like a watch, right? Just like a watch. It even has some great watch interfaces so that you can feel right at home with it. It's a circular smartwatch, and it will be out there with the Moto 360, which is the other circular technology. Think about this, solar panels that you can see through.
Okay, let's talk about solar panels you can see through. Sounds
yeah,
cool.
This is a breakthrough. This is where we start to realize what we already know to be true, that energy is everywhere. We live in a sea of energy, as Tesla said, and now we're going to start to harness it in various ways and play with it as part of our civilization.
Cool.
This is a breakthrough where see-through solar panels have been created. So that means that the coatings can be placed on windows, and windows can all become solar collectors, which is a form of energy that's constantly coming in on us all the time. So why not make it part of our lives?
Yeah, well, I like solar collectors.
Works here, not so great in England, but, you know, depending on where you are, where she is.
Okay.
This is just the beginning of this. They've been able to get an efficiency of only about 1%, and they need to get it up to about 19 or 20% to be competitive with current solar panels. So it's still early on in the process. It's a group at Michigan State University. They have a transparent, colorless method of collecting the sun's rays and converting it into electricity. So it can be wherever you place glass.
Wow.
Yeah.
Are they making anything available anytime soon? Is this just research?
It's still in the research labs. But, you know, that's why you listen to Dr. Future. If this is coming, and if this can become affordable, I guess that's the question. Can it be taken into a mass production process? Can it be taken to ultimately to a 3D printer program? Then, hey, I think we're heading in that direction myself. I don't think.
So is this being done with recycled materials?
There's another piece I have about how old car batteries can be used for making photovoltaics. There's a whole process by which the photovoltaics can use just a small amount of lead. And this amount of lead is enough to make a solar panel with traditional 20% efficiency rate.
Mm-hmm.
One car battery is enough lead for 30 solar panels.
Wow.
Right? So it's a good recycling technique. Uh-huh. So I have a piece on that. I think that's cool, too. There's a whole business in that, just in recycling lead.
Right.
You know, new uses for lead. You know, the materials aren't going to go away as we transition to nanoscale assembly. They'll just be utilized in more refined ways.
Yeah, it's kind of like we're going to get rid of a lot of the combustion processes for getting energy, and we're going to turn them into solar-powered batteries and fuel cells of various sorts.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like lead is bad. Bad lead. No, no, it's an element. It's one of the things the universe has for us to play with.
Sure.
In the correct
context.
Very
useful. It's a very useful element. It's just that it can cause poisoning if you eat it.
Yeah, poisoning, and it can cause damage to ecosystems. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be aware of it. Treat it as a very delicate molecule.
Right. Absolutely.
You have something to say on this, John? You believe in lead in your life? A little bit?
Lead and mercury. I used to play with mercury when I was in grade school. I didn't realize, you know, I'd put it on dimes and quarters and they'd get real shiny and
amazing.
Slippery.
Yeah.
And nobody told me how dangerous they were. I don't think I got brain damage, but I washed my hands later, you know.
That's good. That's good. Well, these things are poisonous. They are dangerous, and they can affect your learning ability and all this kind of stuff. I'm not denying any of that. I'm just saying that the molecule's in the right place for the right purpose are what we're looking for.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, just be more conscious how we play with them.
Very interesting.
One of the ways is to create better solar panels, which we are now doing. Isn't that cool?
Definitely. Well, as long as we're talking about cool future sustainable technology, what about the article you have on the 9-volt electrolyte? What is it? The water splitter.
The Stanford project, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So we have...
That's another piece to the puzzle, too. We are playing with hydrogen also as an energy source. That is part of the future from what I can see as well. So it's not just electricity that's generating power, but hydrogen. The issue with hydrogen is the way we make it currently. We have to use fossil fuels to create hydrogen gas. And what the Stanford group has figured out, a way to create hydrogen with electrolysis, which we knew about before, using electricity to create hydrogen, but electrolysis using cheap components instead of expensive electrodes.
The cheap materials that this article is talking about are nickel and iron. So with nickel and iron, this research group at Stanford were able to make the electrolysis active enough to split water at room temperature with a single 1.5-volt battery. The scientist who did this experiment, his name is Hong Jidai. So he's a professor of chemistry at Stanford.
What's also interesting with this is that their water splitter can make chlorine and sodium hydroxide also. Those are important industrial chemicals.
Mm.
And cheap ways of doing electrolysis allows us to create those molecules as well.
Right. All right. If we could switch over to a hydrogen-based economy, we'd probably be in very good shape because, you know, we'd be able to put a lot less carbon into the air, whether or not that's the major cause of the global climate change that's going on. Just using hydrogen as a fuel instead of burning things and creating carbon dioxide has got to be better for life on the planet.
Well, certainly the most abundant element in the universe. Mm-hmm. You'd think we'd find better uses for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it looks promising, I'd say.
Save energy, save money.
The only byproduct is water, which we kind of like, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
One thing I was thinking while you were talking, if we had not cut down so many rainforests, they would be absorbing that carbon dioxide, which they love, and give us oxygen back.
Absolutely. I agree with you, John. Yeah. I think that the real issue with global climate change is deforestation.
Environmental.
It's taking out nature. It's taking out all the things that
breathe
back into the, that breathe oxygen back into the atmosphere and that sequester water. And that
lumber and mining is very destructive.
Keep the temperature of the ground cool. All of those things are, like, you cut down all the trees and it gets really hot there.
That's what I love about Santa Cruz County. There are millions of redwoods and eucalyptus. I admire them for keeping them.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's definitely something we believe in.
But do you believe in genetic editing?
Genetic editing. You'll have to define genetic editing.
You know, I got to meet Isaac Asimov. He wrote more science fiction stories about robots than anybody else.
Yeah.
Robots taking over the galaxy.
That's true. He had a major robot understanding back in the 50s. Yeah. The three laws of robotics. Remember those?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Hey, we have a caller. Let's say hi to Mark from Watsonville. You guys ready?
Sure.
All right. Hi, Mark.
Hey,
welcome
Mark.
Welcome to Dr. Future.
Oh, howdy, y'all. Yeah, so talking about hydrogen, I remember reading an article recently that Toyota, the company that really taught everybody how to make cars the modern way and popularized the hybrid, is now pushing all their development toward hydrogen vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I saw something about that, too. They're going to do like a fuel cell model sometime next year, right?
Yeah, so apparently they had a few hundred people, as I recall the article saying, all working on hydrogen and moving away from the internal combustion and battery model, which I find very interesting because they've been a leading company and a lot of companies sort of pushed that way. I remember Mercedes showing fuel cells earlier, but boy, Toyota's really been able to put things out in the market and make a big impact. So I'm wondering if you have any more info on that.
I'll research that a little bit more. That's a good question. I think the fuel cells are starting to see some evolution. If anybody is going to be pushing that, it'll probably be them. You know, what's interesting also is I see an alliance with the new battery companies coming in, and I'm thinking there is a Swedish company that was creating what looks like a battery but is actually a fuel cell.
Mm-hmm.
I'll research that a little bit more, too.
Okay, and what's the difference between a battery and a fuel cell? Obviously, they have two different ways of generating the power, right?
The basic understanding is that there's a membrane that you push liquids through. Uh-huh. Mostly for fuel cells, and generates a current that way. Batteries work with acid.
So a chemical process where they pull the electricity out of the chemistry.
From the chemistry, so it slowly deteriorates over time. Mm-hmm. So I'd imagine the membrane would slowly deteriorate in the fuel cell model. But it's worked quite well. NASA is probably the biggest pioneer in fuel cell technology. They've used it in space travel since the mid-60s. So you can imagine how many generations of thinking have gone into those.
Yeah.
So great. I'm sure there's a treasure trove of public information on that topic.
All right. Well, listen, Mark, thanks a lot for pointing that out. We'll try and find out some more for you.
Yeah, and I remembered one other thing from the article. Toyota said that they were moving away from the pure electric car concept because they couldn't get the range. They didn't see that happening, and they knew their customers demanded enough range, and the only way to do that easily and have a quick refueling was to use the hydrogen as a fuel. So
yeah.
I found that interesting that they must be planning on enough production and fuel stations for their vehicles to be able to do that.
Cool.
Yeah, now I'm checking on their site, toyota.com/fuelcell introduces their fuel cell technology. There's a whole page on it there.
Well, thanks again,
Mark.
All right,
thank you.
Yeah,
okay,
we're going to head out to a break here pretty soon. Right at the end of this music, you're listening to the Dr. Future Show here on KSCO. We appreciate your calls. The world of tomorrow.
Welcome back to the Dr. Future Show. We also got a report in from one of our correspondents out there in the field, Hi Mihai, on the Sense Research Foundation's flagship Rejuvenation Biotech Conference. Mm-hmm. This conference was focused on regenerative medicine. All right, regenerative medicine, and specifically regarding the process of aging. Mm-hmm. Regenerative medicine. The holy grail there would be to maybe stop even reverse aging.
Yeah, sure.
No, but it's very early on. We don't have anywhere close to that kind of capability yet. But what we have are better and better tools for studying the aging process in more and more ways, and more minds interested in it. This conference brought together the emerging minds that are thinking about the end of aging specifically and regenerative medicine generally.
Right. What does Mihai's report have for us? What did
he take? Well, they were focused on Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's is a big issue right now in our society, and they're thinking that that could be reversed. Mm-hmm. Cardiovascular issues, cancer issues, and other age-related diseases. But those were the main ones. And this was a report from those fields on what actually is going on in this area. It's a renaissance in science happening. It's where we're starting to really understand the whole nature of disease in a more holistic way. So there are new types of therapies that are coming out to postpone and to treat human aging itself as an engineering problem rather than as a degenerative disease. Mm-hmm. Mihai liked Peter Diamandis, the founder of the XPRIZE, quite a bit.
Apparently. Yeah, he's hard not to like. Yeah. He's a really great, innovative guy.
He was there. He was one of the co-founders of Singularity University with Ray Kurzweil, the chief engineer over at Google, who's also very focused on the end of aging as a goal. There's an idea of thinking about abundance and about how there's more than there ever has before, than the capabilities of thinking more expansively are important for breakthroughs in these fields, in these research. So he had written a book called Abundance, which is all about thinking more rather than trying to fight over smaller pieces of the pie. For what? You know, when we could be creating bigger pies.
Yeah, and of course what he's famous for mm-hmm. is the creating of the XPRIZE that was pretty much very influential in changing the nature of the space race so that it became more of a private industry investment opportunity. Because he started the XPRIZE for getting off the planet with Burt Rutan.
Yeah.
So let's see. I think we've got a couple of guests here. We've got a studio guest and we've got a phone guest. Say hello. Introduce yourself.
Yeah, hi.
Hello. I walked in hearing the word abundance.
Abundance.
And I was thinking about shaking your booty because you got to give out the abundance, you know, abundant dance, shaking your buns.
So folks, this is a guy that was just walking by on the street and he just, you know, that's how open we are at KSEO. Well, yeah, thank you. And good to know our mobile audience here.
Yeah,
that's
great. Shake your booty. Have some abundance in your life.
Yeah, okay.
I'm actually here with John.
Oh, okay. And what's your name?
My name is Mark.
Mark's been here before.
Yeah, I'm really
excited.
I'm so excited
to be in here. I just had to throw it
out. Oh, good. Well, thank you. Thanks for coming in.
Well, listen, let's say hi to RC and Aptos, huh?
Yeah, okay. Let's bring it.
All we need is Matthew and Luke to write another bestseller.
Yeah, let's keep it going.
Mark, Matthew.
Who else wants to join the party?
Hello, RC. Welcome to the Dr. Future Show.
Greetings, Dr. Future.
Hey. So what's on your mind at this moment?
Well, you're talking about age reversal.
Yes.
Or stopping the aging process, which is a field of interest of mine.
Uh-huh.
I haven't done enough, and I need more time. Mm. But do you know the only documented way of at least slowing down the aging process?
Not eating so much?
That's it. That's the only way that we know that we can slow down the aging process is there's like really severe calorie restriction. I mean, enough to make sure that you're healthy.
Yeah.
But...
Yeah, no, I hear you. You know, I just got a video made by a Euro group about a breatharianism is on the rise in Europe. And these guys are living 100 years plus. So.
But what I'm waiting for, and maybe I'll never see it, is the type of nanotechnology where we could see these little nanobots going through our systems and zapping cancer cells and cleaning out the plaque in your heart arteries and brain arteries for the Alzheimer's that you're talking about.
Yeah, our little house cleaners. They're kind of the perfect servants.
But that's, I don't know of any experimental processes where that's actually underway. I know people are working on it, but where, you know, it's actually being applied in test case studies. I don't know of any.
Well, the place that our Mihai suggested is the humanlongevity.com, H-U-M-A-N, longevity.com.
Sure.
And XPRIZE, where they're keeping track of all these. XPRIZE is actually giving rewards out for innovative new ideas like the best tricorder.
What do you think about these technologies being developed and only rich people will be able to afford them?
Well, that's like the argument of computers are only for rich people.
You don't believe it.
I think things are getting so cheap so fast, it's ridiculous. Anyway, you want to come?
I heard recently that they've come to the point where they could put computers on moths and control where they fly.
Small, cheap, and out of control.
Yeah.
I've seen some Kickstarter projects where they put little backpacks on bugs and they use sound waves to, you know, get them to turn one way or another. So, yeah,
wow.
There's
so
definitely...
maybe the nanobots can be actual bugs that we control.
Yeah, maybe.
But I'm with you. I agree. I don't believe that they'd be able to keep, if they do come up with technologies to reverse age, I don't believe that they'll be able to keep them from common citizens. I don't believe that...
Now, the have and have not era is over. On that.
It is. I'm a political guy, too. And can you imagine if you're a congressman and running your campaign and telling people, oh, I'm sorry, but common citizens won't be able to get these technologies. Only rich people can, because they are the only ones who can contribute to my campaign. Boy, talk about a losing campaign right there.
That's a good way to shoot yourself in the foot.
Well, actually, you know, I had a friend who was a doctor from India, and he was talking about that he, as a doctor, gets funding for his patients there is basically by presenting an investment package to a number of investors that might be pharmaceuticals, it might be a private-public enterprise, and he presents his patients as basically if he's got 25 patients and they're getting a certain kind of treatment that costs a certain amount of money and some other treatment has a new viable potential and can treat those patients better, then people are actually investing based on the number of patients that they can help, you know? So...
interesting.
Yeah. And it's sort of not the way that the insurance company does it, which is like talk to the doctor first and market the product. It's the other way around. It's like talk to the actual doctor who has the patients, get him to talk about his patients and recommend what he thinks would be the best way to treat the group, you know?
So. I've said my fair share.
All right. Well, thank you, man.
Thanks, Marcy. Appreciate your call. Bye-bye.
How to throw another meme out before the hour. We all heard of GMO, right? Genetically modified food.
Mm-hmm.
How about genetically edited fruit?
Again, what does that mean exactly?
Well, this is not GMO. Genetically modified food is when we introduce foreign genes into an organism.
Right, yeah. That's right? The now, one this that is, people want labeled.
This is more where you edit within the fruit itself or the other crop that you're involved with.
Gene tweaking.
Yeah, it's a little gene tweaking, right? Let's say you want the apple not to turn brown when it's exposed to the air. So you can tweak it so it doesn't do that.
Wow.
Or maybe turn another color if you prefer.
Like maybe within the seed itself?
Yeah. Yeah, more within the actual code. You're playing with the code that's there.
Yeah.
In the genetic code, it has all the revisions that went on through time for that particular genome. So eventually we'll be able to read it well enough so you can edit it and maybe incorporate some things that nature thought about a few generations ago that hasn't gotten around to trying yet that we think might be a good idea.
Right.
You know, so all of our experiments are there ready for us to play with.
I was talking to a guy outside who was telling me through years of using chemicals to fight off the bugs and tweaking of foods, they've lost a lot of their original abilities of defending themselves, for instance. And so maybe by tweaking, we can give them back their original robust nature, the nutrients that maybe they've lost over the years through all this genetic manipulation.
It's another way of getting health.
Fix it.
Yeah, make it better.
Well, there's different ways that they're approaching genetic therapies. Some of them are meant to just prevent the deterioration of the cell so that your cells don't age. They always reproduce perfectly, just like when you were born. Other techniques are about learning, mapping what different parts of the genes do, and then triggering those parts that you want to experiment with. Like, we have an article about regenerating lizard tails and how that kind of genetic research is being used to understand how humans can regenerate parts of their body in a healthy way.
And our bodies are giant nanobiotech chemistry factories, and we can tweak them to create more or less molecules of anything that they're already creating.
We've already got nanobots.
yes, they're there. We just have to know how to access, which is part of what our next hour is about, accessing that data.
All right, folks, this is the Dr. Future Show on KSCO, Santa Cruz, San Jose, Salinas, Monterey. We'll be back after the news for another hour with our guest,
Arjuna himself.
Okay.